Hello, and welcome to the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists podcast for July. I'm Vicky, and as always, I will be joining Derek Munn, the RCSLT's Director of Policy and Public Affairs, for our monthly catch-up. Out of interest, this podcast will be the 50th in our series of RCSLT podcasts, so there's lots to listen to in our back catalogue if you haven't already had a look. You can tune into that on soundcloud.com/RCSLT, or you can listen via your favourite podcast apps. So with that, good morning, Derek.
Hello.
So in England, on Monday, we had our so-called Freedom Day. And then in Northern Ireland, next Monday, they will be having some what they call modest relaxations to their restrictions. And then there are also plans for easing of restrictions in Wales and Scotland, probably in early August. And I just wondered, against that backdrop, what is RCSLT's stance on the continuing risk from COVID, please?
I think summed up in the one word, caution, and that would be our message both to speech and language therapists as members, those we work with, and really to the general public. For example, we as an organisation co-signed a letter with a range of other health bodies urging people to continue to wear masks in public. And this is based on what we know about virus spread and infection. We continue to work intensively around the appropriate PPE being available, because we continue to believe this is an ongoing issue that will go beyond the current pandemic, and also on ventilation. And it's good to see that they're both the Labour Party, the opposition's messaging, and now the government's messaging now routinely refer to ventilation. That's good that the messaging has changed, but we continue to urge the guidance to continue to evolve to be in line with the best available science. So I'm afraid the message from the Royal College is caution about reopening.
Okay, thank you. That's kind of what I expected you to say. Okay, great, thanks. And is there anything else you'd like to add about COVID or long COVID?
A couple of things, Vicky. I'm pleased that there's finally been some progress on transparent masks, which, as you know, we've been lobbying on since the outset. With the four nations of the UK working together, a process is now in place and products are moving through the system. Now, again, caution is required. There is no identified FFP3 transparent mask at this stage. Important to check carefully what grade and use any product has. The COVID hub on the RCSLT website tells you how to go about procuring locally. The second thing I would say relates to long COVID. We had a meeting at the beginning of this week with the director of NICE and with the guideline manager for long COVID to push the importance of speech, language, communication and swallowing. Now, there's two issues here. One is the evidence, where we're going to continue to send in evidence about the speech, language, communication and swallowing. And the second is the place of SLTs within the multidisciplinary core team for long COVID. Probably got more of an opening on the former than the latter, but they are reviewing the guideline in September, and we can continue our efforts to that end. And lastly, it's worth checking a report that ICANN, the Children's Charity, put out a couple of weeks ago, which gives further evidence about the impact of the pandemic on children and young people with speech, language and communication needs, and we put our name to that.
Fantastic, thank you. And how's it going with the Build Back Better petition, please?
Well, as we record this, Vicky, I can bring you breaking news, because overnight, before we call this, the government responded to the petition. Now, that's because this was a petition that was done off the back of our service user survey about building back better for SLT services after the pandemic. We got through 10,000 signatures quite quickly. In fact, we're now over 12,000, and 10,000 triggers a response from the government. Now, that response lays out existing known things. There's nothing new in it, and I guess that's to be expected. But it means that the government have had to specifically pull together where they're at on speech and language therapy. Of course, the one thing it doesn't mention is funding. And I think our response and our continued push, because we've got until December to build further on this petition, it stays open on the Parliament website for 6 months. I think we're going to continue to push around the investment that's needed to back this up. We've got to 12,000 signatures because of member engagement and because of a huge amount of parent and service user engagement. Also, some celebrities, major and not so major. Michael Rosen was an early supporter, which was great. Scouting for Girls, for those of you for whom they were a thing. And just yesterday, Sally Phillips as well. So we're pleased to see that engagement.
It was exciting to see that there was a new report on neurodiversity in prisons that came out last week. Can you highlight to listeners, please, how important this is and how the RCSLT was involved?
Yes, and we approached the government very early on this one because we have an interest, obviously, in justice and have also been engaged recently in making sure that the language we use is up to date in respect of neurodiversity and autism. We supplied evidence, we supplied testimonials to them. We took part in stakeholder conversations, and we're very pleased that all of our key calls are in this report on neurodiversity in prisons. So language in the screening assessment, the need for training, the need to make reasonable adjustments around communication need, we're very pleased. It's worth saying that the responsible minister, Robert Buckland, is a long-term advocate. He has a child with autism and is formerly a vice chair of our all-party group. So over the years, we've been able to work with Robert on his understanding of justice and speech and language, and we're pleased to see that come through. While we're on it, it's worth saying that there's a new autism code in Wales as well, which has had some controversy around it, but we've engaged, and an updated UK government strategy on autism as well.
Thank you. And my final question for this month's catch-up is, are there any other things that you think that listeners will be keen to hear about, please?
There are a few, Vicky, and the first is a big one, and it's the NHS Reform Bill in England. This is now published. It's had what's called its second reading. Now, the second reading is where the House of Commons, in this case, debates what are called the general principles of the bill. So it's not do we agree with absolutely everything in this piece of draft legislation, it's do we agree with the general approach. What was interesting was that Labour took a position of opposition. Well, they are the opposition. But Labour have focused on what they see as a back door being open to greater private sector involvement in the NHS. I think this is an interesting move because most players in the health system, including most professional bodies, including the Allied Health Professions Federation, broadly supportive and broadly welcoming of the bill. So it's interesting for Labour to place itself kind of outside the consensus there, which we'll need to see how that develops. Of course, it is no silver bullet, and it will be all about how it's made a reality of and is it properly funded and all of those things. As I've mentioned before, we're working in a coalition alliance around children's issues on the bill, making sure that they're placed in the right place, using the whole health economy, which not only means the role of allied health in speech and language, but also means how non-NHS, non-profit and independent providers are properly taken into workforce planning, service design, and everything at the local level. So those are amongst the issues. The bill's got all sorts of other things in it. I mean, if you're interested in the borrowing powers of foundation trusts, you've come to the right place. There is stuff in it about regulators, and this is something that's been bubbling around for years and we've had to keep a close eye on, which is about reducing the number of regulators. I think there are actually about 15, but also taking powers to move professions out of regulation. And certainly for speech and language and some of the other allied health professions as well, we would look very averse at any change to the regulation regime for the protection of the public. There's also, we're involved, of course, in alliances around swallowing. And there's now a statement being issued by the alliance of organisations we're part of on the swallowing side about what they're looking for from the legislation. So that's the NHS Reform Bill. It carries on through Parliament in the autumn. It's still the intention that some elements of the new regime will come into place on the 1st of April next year. The other big thing in England has been around conversations with Health Education England about workforce planning. And we've done a huge amount of work putting together everything we know about different specialisms, about where people are in the life course, about career paths, to try basically and support HEE with the bid they need to make to the Treasury around the spending review. And we're saying, it's not enough just to think about gross numbers of speech and language therapists. You've got to think about career progression. You've got to think about senior posts and specialist posts. And again, you've got to think about the whole health workforce, not just NHS. So a huge amount of work on that. Worth saying, apropos of health education, that we do continue to see developments in new courses. So Birmingham City have announced that they're going to be the second university to set up a speech therapy apprenticeship. We expect another one shortly. And in Wales, a new university course has been announced at Wrexham in the north. The last thing I would say in terms of those developments at UK level is around mental health reform. We still don't know when the legislation is being produced, but the government has responded to the consultation on mental health reform, on what's called their green paper. And we've actually now been asked to talk to them about what we're looking for in the legislation. So it's good that we've got that open dialogue. Two last things. And we've talked rightly about the success we had with the neurodiversity report in England. It would be remiss of me not to mention a big win for our colleagues in Northern Ireland around the Northern Ireland mental health strategy, where, again, pretty much everything we were looking for about an understanding of speech, language, communication and swallowing and what that means in terms of service provision and staffing is in the new Northern Ireland mental health strategy. So impressive work by our Northern Ireland colleagues on that. And lastly, the Welsh Government have become the, have produced a new race equality action plan, which goes further and in more detail than any of the other governments of the UK. So we've responded in particular detail about that in the context of the challenge of Black Lives Matter, to welcome what the Welsh Government are doing on race equality and go through both for speech and language therapists and for the implications for service users, exactly what that means. So I think those would be my main things to update to you today.
As always, lots to talk about. So thank you for today, and I look forward to seeing you again next month. Thank you.